hookers.
Rumor spreading round in that Texas town about the shack outside the game. You know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you want to go to that whole mile on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
Welcome, everybody, to Drive Through HR. William, Nisha, and Brian coming to you live every day, talking with the folks who care about HR, and a very, very happy Veterans Day to everybody. I've seen lots of appreciation and love going out to the folks that have, are, and will be serving all over the place to let us do what we're doing right now. So, well, let's get our guest on. Welcome back, and I hope that Iowa is treating you well. Joe Gerstant, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, man, it's good to – always good to hear your voice, always. So if you could, introduce yourself first to our Drive Through HR family, and then we'll start our little chat.
Yeah, so my name is Joe Gerstant. I speak and write and do some consulting, and most of my work is all focused on issues related to diversity and inclusion. And then I do some work also under the Talent Anarchy brand with my partner in crime, Jason Lauritsen. We do some speaking and consulting together as well.
Nice. Well, we are having the Veterans Day Military Service Remembrance Day kind of theme show, Joe, and I know that you served in the military, I believe, the Marines, correct?
Yes.
So when you made the decision to go into the Marines, obviously you could have chose any path into the service, right? Why take some of that decision? Why did you choose the Marines?
You know, I don't have a real impressive answer for that. The reason why I chose the Marines was because when I was in high school, I think it was my junior year, there was a Marine Corps recruiter that came to our high school, and there was other recruiters, but the Marine Corps recruiter that came to our high school was hands down the most impressive human being that I'd ever seen. He was just, you know, he was a poster Marine, dress blues, very disciplined, very serious, but you could also tell that he really believed in what he was doing. He really believed in the Marine Corps, that you know, in the significance of what he was doing, and that very much appealed to me. I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I grew up for sure, but I was interested in the military. I had gotten interested in the military in high school, and I'd read a lot about World War II. My dad had been in the Air Force. Both my grandfathers had been in the Army. So I was kind of leaning towards the military, but that Marine Corps recruiter that came to my high school, and I can't think of his name to save my life, but he was the one that kind of captured my imagination. He was just, you know, he was, I kind of wanted to be like that guy. And so that was kind of the thing that tipped me towards the Marine Corps.
Of the things that you can tell us about, of course, what was your experience like? I mean, you know, come on now. We don't want you to have to kill anybody here. But of the things that you can tell us, so you sign up, you go in, there's some type of indoctrination, there's some type of camp. Like, walk all of us neophytes, those that haven't served, through that process.
Yeah, I spent four years in active duty in the Marine Corps, and I, you know, everyone has a different experience. My Marine Corps experience was wonderful. I drank the Kool-Aid. I loved the Marine Corps. I came very close to staying in the Marine Corps. But I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. I mean, I had visited with recruiters. I had talked to people. But it's such a unique culture that even if you think you have kind of some idea of what it is, when you show up for boot camp, you're just kind of overwhelmed. You can't even understand what they're saying, what they're screaming at you, because they're doing, you know, they're using, they've got their own language and their own stuff. But so I went to boot camp in San Diego. Boot camp was right about 3 months long. I graduated boot camp. I went to Infantry Training School in North Carolina, Camp Lejeune. That was about another 3 months long, and that kind of built on some of the stuff that we learned in boot camp, but it was very focused on infantry tactics. And that was my job in the Marine Corps. I was an infantryman. So in North Carolina, in infantry training school, we spent a lot of time with weapons, and we spent a lot of time out in the woods working on offensive tactics and defensive tactics. After I finished that school, I went to one more school. I went to Security Forces School because I was going to be assigned to a Marine Corps Security Force for a year before going to an actual infantry battalion. So I went to Virginia Beach, Virginia for a month for that school. And that was a pretty fun school. We spent a week on the pistol range. We spent a week on the shotgun range. We did a lot of dynamic house entry stuff, going in through windows, kind of some anti-terrorism stuff. That was a pretty fun school. And it was a little bit more laid back than infantry school, and infantry school was a little bit more laid back than boot camp. So we were kind of getting closer to being, you know, fully formed Marines. And then after I finished that school, so I'd been in the Marine Corps for 7 months at this point and had just been in training the whole time. So I still didn't really know what the real Marine Corps was like. But I got my first duty assignment. My first duty assignment was Keflavik, Iceland. And I was not very excited about that. I had no interest in going to Iceland. I had no idea where it was or what happened there or why they would be sending Marines there. But there is a NATO air base in Keflavik, Iceland. It used to be pretty important. I don't know that it is anymore, but that's kind of the primary role of this base is to monitor the, I think it's the Russian Northern Fleet and their submarines. And so Iceland's kind of in a key spot to run radar and planes and to kind of keep an eye on what was going there. So anyway, I got sent there for a year. And there's a small contingency of Marines in Iceland. There's, I think, 70, maybe 80 Marines. And we provided security for some important parts of the base, and then we were supposed to be the ground defense force. If Russia ever invaded Iceland, the 70 Marines were supposed to, I guess, slow them down a little bit. But so I spent a year there, and you know, with 70 or 80 other Marines, and that was a pretty interesting experience. When that year was up, then I got assigned to an actual infantry battalion, and of course I went from Iceland to the desert. I went to 29 Palms, California, was attached or assigned to 3rd Battalion, 7th Marine Regiment. And for the rest of my time in the Marine Corps, which was about, I had about 2.5 years left, that's where I was stationed. We weren't there very much. We traveled quite a bit, but we were stationed there. And while I was there, I went to Bridgeport, California, which is in Northern California. The Marine Corps has a mountain warfare training center there. I went there for a month and became an assault climber, went through that training. We spent a month in Thailand, which was magnificent. Thailand is a beautiful place, especially for 20-year-old single Marines with a little bit of money and a little bit of free time. It's an interesting place. And then was deployed to Okinawa, Japan, and that was supposed to be a 6-month deployment. Went over there, and while we were there, Operation Desert Shield began, and so we got extended in Okinawa. We ended up being in Japan for about, I think our unit was there for about 9 or 10 months altogether, because everything got kind of slowed down and mixed up when the Operation Desert Shield began. And after we had been in Okinawa for about 9 months, then we ended up going over to the Gulf. And that was in Desert Shield had already been going on for a while. Desert Storm hadn't begun. It was, I don't remember, January or February of 91. Shortly after we got there, then the air assault began, and then the ground assault began, and that was obviously over pretty quickly. And then we were actually one of the first units to come back to the States because we had been overseas for so long. By the time we were done with Desert Storm, I think our unit had been overseas for about a year. So we hadn't been in the Gulf as long as some units, but we had been gone from home for a long time. So we were actually one of the first units to go back, at least on the West Coast. And that was a pretty bizarre experience because we just had, you know, that we just didn't have access to nearly as much information or news as people do today, and we didn't really know what was going on in the States. We had we really had no idea how much support there was behind that. You know, our parents and friends and family would say wonderful things to us in letters, but they, you know, they were parents and friends and family. So we just had no idea. And when we got off the plane, you know, kind of the only frame of reference we had was we knew that when people came back from Vietnam that they weren't treated very well. We knew that that was, you know, that a lot of that had happened. And so I think more so than expecting a lot of support and parades, that's kind of what we were expecting, which was way off base because there was a huge, massive crowd waiting for us, and there was parades and all kind of crazy stuff when we came home. And that's a pretty wonderful way to come home. And then at that point I had, I was close to the end of my 4 years, and very close to the end. I think my enlistment was up in August of 91. Yeah, August of 91, just within the last 2 or 3 months, I decided to go ahead and get out and give college a try. And I figured if I really missed the Marine Corps, I could always come back in. But it was, and again, everyone has a different experience. There's a lot of different jobs. There's a lot of different units. But I really enjoyed and appreciate my military experience. I traveled. I got to see stuff. I learned a phenomenal amount about myself. And it was a, you know, it's a long time ago. There's full-grown adults that haven't been alive for as long as I've been out of the Marine Corps, so it was a long time ago, but that's, you know, that's one of the experience, that's one of the most formative experiences probably of my life. So I appreciate it, and, you know, I continue to try to be respectful and appreciative of other folks that serve and leave family and friends in safety and make those sacrifices. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
Nice. Joe, if you would, kind of, because I know a lot of people haven't served in the military, so I know a lot of people are interested in kind of the feelings and thought process. So when you first went into the Marine Corps, kind of how was the feeling of getting rid of kind of being a civilian? What was the transition as you went through that, as they kind of reprogrammed? Because, I mean, that's exactly what happens, is you need to be reprogrammed into working on a team and work very specifically because of a very tried and true process. And so
it's definitely culture shock. I think you experience very real culture shock entering the military, and I think you experience very real culture shock leaving the military, because you do get programmed. And when you go back out into the civilian world, a lot of that stuff that you've worked and that you've developed and gotten used to doesn't really work anymore. But, I mean, like I said, when you first show up at boot camp, they're, you know, in your face screaming at you, and, A, you don't know what they're so mad about because you haven't even done anything wrong yet, and, B, you don't even understand what they're telling you to do because you don't know the language and the words that you're using. And so the first few days are just overwhelming. I mean, I remember, you know, the first 2 or 3 days of boot camp, I was just dumbfounded at how massive of a mistake I had made. I was like, how did I do this? How do I get out of this? This is big. Like, you've screwed up before, but this is huge, man. This is going to take some real ingenuity to get out of this. It's so, you're tired, you're confused. They shave everyone's head and put everyone in the same clothes. You don't even know who anybody is. You all look exactly the same. It's very overwhelming, and it's, you know, it's overwhelming for a purpose. As you said, Ryan, the military knows what they're doing. They've been doing this for a while, and they're pretty good at it. So it is definitely culture shock. The nice thing about that is, you know, the Marine Corps, I can only speak about Marine Corps boot camp. The Marine Corps is so good at breaking you down that when you start to come together as a platoon in boot camp and you start to actually be able to tell each other apart and you start to understand what the drill instructors are saying and you start to get good at some of the stuff that you're supposed to get good at, you know, the pendulum really swings back the other way. You go from, you know, on day 3 or day 4 of boot camp being sad, confused, tired, hungry, scared, terrified, all of those things, to when you leave boot camp, you are kind of walking on top of the world. It's the biggest thing that you've ever done in your life. It's the most important thing that you've ever done in your life. You love these yahoos that you've gone through the experience with like you've never loved another human being. I mean, the pendulum really swings back in the other direction. So that first part is weird and confusing and painful and awkward, but they really bring you back together. You feel pretty good about yourself, but you also have already this sense of camaraderie and esprit de corps that I think is so incredible in the military. And I have a bias. I think especially in the Marine Corps, it's important. But you still see it. I mean, I've been out a long time, and I bump into guys that were in the Marine Corps, and we've instantly got a thing. We've instantly got that common bond, and it's a common bond that runs pretty deep. But there's definitely culture shock on the front end, but there's culture shock getting out of the military as well. I was a raving lunatic for 6 months, maybe a year, because I'd gotten really good at being a Marine, and, a lot of that stuff doesn't have a place in the civilian world. So especially, having been in the infantry. When you're in the infantry, you don't have an office or a desk. You don't drive a truck. Your job in peacetime is to practice for war. That's your job. That's what you do in the infantry. And so as much as I love being in the infantry, and if I was to go back in the Marine Corps, wouldn't think about doing anything else, there's not a lot of application for some of that stuff in the civilian world unless you go into law enforcement or some of that stuff. And so there's a little bit of a culture shock there. And I went from the Marine Corps, from an infantry battalion that had come out of a combat situation to a dorm of a state university. That was challenging for me for a while. It took me a while to kind of transition back into a healthy, functioning civilian. But made the transition, and no one was, seriously harmed in the process.
Well, and it's interesting when you do that transition, because I was in armor. I was National Guard, and so it was a little bit different, but we went through the Army basic training at AIT, and I can remember on the way to Fort Knox, Kentucky, January, I was so scared shitless, and this wonderful young lady I sat by on the plane, talked me off a perpetual ledge. I mean, she had no idea who she was going to be sitting by, because I was just a mess. Because I'm like, I can't go back. I can't turn around. What have I done? I was 17, so I was the youngest one in the company, maybe the battalion. And so I had a lot of things going on, totally immature, totally had no clue, and got there, and the shouting started, and the go there, run there, do this, just total structure from unstructure. And it was, and like you said, over the course of a few weeks where you get into the routine and you're not the new person anymore, you get to see the scared people coming off the buses. It's a fascinating kind of hierarchical transition where you're like, okay, I kind of got this, and you kind of get into, you kind of get into your routine and things. And it's so interesting because I don't run into a lot of people, because I was in Nebraska, and that I shared that experience with. And I got to about a month ago, one of my fraternity brothers is now, we were both privates in the armor company years ago. Him and I got to eat lunch together. I hadn't seen him for 20 years. We got to, his name's Tom Reinders, Lieutenant Colonel Tom Reinders, who is at the Pentagon now. And we were privates together a gazillion years ago. And so it was nice to kind of, and he reminded me of a whole bunch of people. Like you said, meeting people, from the Marines, you instantly can talk about things and just know things. It was nice. It was nice. Yeah. And the other thing for everybody listening, what's interesting is I never ever talked, my father was in Vietnam, and we never really ever talked about that very much until I got back from basic training at AIT. And then we actually, for the first time, actually had a conversation about some of the things that, that he had been through, 20-some years before, because he knew now that I would probably understand it more.
Yeah. It's very cool.
So let me do a quick reset, everybody. You're listening to Drive Through HR. It is definitely Veterans Day. We're talking to an amazing guy, just who's willing to share a lot of kind of witty thinks and feels with us all, Joe Gersant. So where do you think, just kind of, especially where you do consulting and you speak on different things, on diversity and inclusion, working with people around kind of thought processes, where do you think they can start getting the dialogue around where, you know, treating veterans differently and embracing kind of vets and just all the things that come at you, where can practitioners actually start that conversation and not get overwhelmed?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think to some extent it varies a little bit on the organization. A few of the simple things that come to mind is, you know, thinking about making sure that you're accessible and findable to veterans. You know, thinking about making that a part of your recruitment or talent attraction strategy. Are you going to, you know, career fairs and events that are focused to some extent on vets? I think, like anytime you reach out to a social group, it's important to do some internal work and make sure that you are challenging and checking some of the stereotypes. You know, there's stereotypes about veterans like there is about any group. And some of them are positive and some of them are negative, but they all get in the way of making well-informed decisions about individuals. So I think, you know, sometimes those stereotypes get in the way of making the right decision about hiring people. Realizing that, you know, folks that have come out of military experience do have potentially some unique experiences, some unique perspectives and tools to apply to the work, but also keeping in mind, especially if they've recently come out of the military, that they're going through a pretty big transition themselves. That they're, and again, it varies. You know, coming out of the infantry is different than, you know, maybe coming out of an administrative job that's been a little bit closer to what the civilian world would be like, but they're going through a transition as well. They're leaving a culture that is different than yours, and they're coming into the civilian world and into the corporate world. So I think that's, you know, part of what folks need to keep in mind as well. They might need some support or some guidance in that area, but I think it's a valuable investment. I think there's a lot of opportunity there for organizations.
Joe, you've talked about the transition a couple different times. Who owns that transition? Is that, do you think the military and its different branches kind of need to do a better job of kind of softening the ground from leaving from one and kind of getting into the other? Or do you think it's all up to the individual? Or do you think corporations also play there as well?
You know, I think a lot of that responsibility should rest on the military. And the military may be doing a much better job now than they were when I got out. I know there's a lot of things that have changed in the past 20 or 25 years. There was some effort around helping me put together a resume, which I'd never, you know, had never even thought about or considered when I was leaving the military. And I think there was some services available, but we had to, you know, we had to seek them out. And I never seriously considered that it was going to be a hard transition for me until after the transition was over. I didn't know it was going to be weird for me until it was just weird, and I was in a very different world. I think, you know, one of the things that folks that come out of the military struggle with, and maybe especially combat arms, is a really, really deeply rooted self, a sense of independence, of being able to take care of stuff, of being able to deal with it. I'm a Marine. I'm an infantry Marine. I'm a combat veteran. You know, what leads you to think I would need help with anything? You know, that's kind of, to some extent, that's, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's a little bit of the mindset that you leave with. So I think it is, I think it's, you know, kind of hard to help folks that are pretty convinced that they don't need help. But I think a lot of the responsibility lies on the military. I think, you know, certainly some of it lies on the individual. I don't know if any of the responsibility lies on corporate folks trying to find these folks and bring them into the workforce, but I think it's an opportunity to set yourself apart. I think the more appealing you can be to veterans, the more accessible you can be to veterans, the more supportive you can be to veterans, just like any other social group, I think the more competitive you are going to be for those talented folks that are coming out of the military. You know,
nice.
I've done some work. I've done some a little bit of volunteer work just with, you know, some PTSD services and other things that we're trying to do a little bit better job of providing to veterans. And you know, the hardest part is still, you know, finding ways to help folks that are really bought into the idea that they don't need help. That's regardless of how good the service is or, you know, how well funded it is. It's hard to find people that don't want to be that don't want to be helped, that have come to see being helped as almost a form of weakness. And so, you know, that's one of the trickiest parts of the transition, I would say.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because I think probably the biggest thing is, like, once you come out of that environment, it's very black and white, and you move into corporate America and just society in general is very gray. And
yeah,
that is like a stark contrast that I think is what I saw, because I recruited a lot, I hired a lot when I was in Atlanta from the different bases as people were transitioning out. And that was the biggest difference, is the frustration on, I don't understand. I mean, everything's SOP driven and it's very process oriented. And like, here's exactly how things go usually, versus we can kind of do it that way. Don't have to do it that way. That gray area is just an absolute like disruption to how people think and feel and act. And
absolutely.
And it's a collision, basically.
Absolutely. In at least the unit that I was in, there wasn't a lot of space for drama. There wasn't personal issues. If there was something that came up, it got dealt with. And when you go to the corporate world, that's not quite as cut and dry either. There's a lot more organizational politics and things that you can talk about and things that you can't talk about. In the unit that I was in, there wasn't a lot of space for that. And so that in itself can be kind of a hard transition. If that's what my experience is, I may be way more straight shooting and direct than the people around me are comfortable with. You know, that's just another example of where, you know, different expectations and different norms can cause some tension, making that transition. So,
tell us just, we got about four minutes left. So tell us a little bit about, because you're co-author of a book, Social Gravity, and tell us a little bit about how kind of the experience, all that experience played into actually writing a book and what you talk about. How's that formed you? Kind of where does that really play into how you present information and speak and write today?
Yeah, probably a lot of ways. The first speaking that I did was actually in the Marine Corps. While we were in Okinawa, Japan, I got detached from our unit, and I was actually an instructor at what was called the Northern Training Area, NTA. I was an instructor there for about 6 months. So that's where I did my first kind of public speaking. And I think, you know, the Marine Corps experience in general has informed me in a lot of different ways, probably some I'm not even aware of. But I think, you know, most of my work is focused on diversity and inclusion. I think some of my first, I didn't use the word diversity or inclusion, but some of my first experiences and lessons with people different than me happened in the Marine Corps. You know, I grew up in a fairly isolated farming community, and going into the Marine Corps put me around a lot of different kinds of people. And it wasn't whether I was going to choose to be friends with them or not. We lived together, we worked together, we played together, period. And so I think in some ways the Marine Corps does some phenomenal work. I think some of the best work the military does around diversity, because it just puts people that are different from each other together, period. You're in the same unit, deal with it. Not saying that the military does everything perfectly related to diversity and inclusion, but I think they do a lot of very good stuff. And so I think that, you know, that experience when I was 18 or 19 years old started to crack parts of my head open around diversity and inclusion, because everything that I knew about people that were African American, Hispanic, all of these different social groups, almost all of it was based at that point in my life, almost all of it was based on stereotypes, because I hadn't interacted with people from those groups. And here I was living and working and playing with people that didn't match up to all of those stereotypes. And so I think that was one of the more valuable things that happened that continues to show up in my life, because that is the work that I do. But I don't know. I think, you know, probably a lot of ways. And another pretty important thing that I took away from the military, and that I think a lot of people take away from military experience, is that you don't have a very good idea of what you're actually capable of. You've got to actually go out and just try to do different stuff to actually learn that. Wonderful thing about the military is it just puts you in strange experiences, and you do things that you wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to do. I know that I can, you know, put a pack on my back and walk for 15 or 20 miles. I know that I can rappel down the side of a cliff or out the back of a helicopter. I know that I can go several days without food, without sleep. A lot of people don't know that because they've never been forced to do that. And so I think, you know, when I'm tackling a project or I decide that I'm going to write a book or do something like that, I don't think that stuff is quite as intimidating as it would have been before I went into the Marine Corps, because I've got this kind of big crazy list of things that I did that's kind of impressive. So why would I think that I can't do this? Why would I think that I can't speak at that kind of conference or write a book? Those are at least a couple of the ways in which that stuff, that experience continues to show up in my life, personally and professionally.
Well, Joe, thank you for coming on with us today and just sharing it and giving everybody a firsthand perspective of kind of your experience. It's always always good to hear your voice. Can't wait to see you here in a couple weeks. And everybody out there, please take a chance, take a moment to say just appreciation if you have it. It's all right if you don't. That's your deal. So we're out of here, and guess what? Have a good day.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Matt.